Fire it up.
Let's do it.
Hello, folks. We are here for week four of Take the Points College Football Podcast. This week, we've got a lot of good stuff, including our greatest teams of our lifetime bracket, an awesome matchup between the 1993 Florida State Seminoles and the 2009 Alabama Crimson Tide. Charlie Ward versus Mark Ingram and Greg McElroy. It's going to be a good one. But first, I'm going to throw it over to Dan Partridge and Ryan Spillett in Phoenix, Arizona, who are huddled over Ryan's iPhone trying to record from a mysterious location.
Very.
Fellas, tell me about week three. What games stood out?
Week three, college football. As not talked about on Take the Points, but talked about amongst us three via text message, was how sometimes when there's a major primetime game, the other game that's going on at the same time turns out to be really good, involving just one ranked team. And we had that on Saturday night with Clemson blowing out Louisville, which I was very surprised. I said it probably wouldn't happen on the podcast. I thought it'd be their way around. So my fault there, America. But I would like to say congratulations to the University of Texas Longhorns. Even though you did not win that game, that was just an amazing football game to watch. Amazing job by head coach Herman calling a bunch of great timeouts late in the fourth quarter and overtime. I really wish they would have went for a two-point conversion at the end of the first overtime to go for the win, because even if you miss it, it's kind of like winning also still, because you only lose by a point, but you know, whatever. Hard way for them to lose with the quarterback in strip, but week three for me was all about UT. I mean, if they can play that kind of inspired football already, things are looking up. And college football as a whole is just awesome when UT's great. So very excited to see the Longhorns.
Dan, thanks to federal inmate 87924, Mr. Art Briles, you are without a favorite team. You used to love Oregon, and then when Helfrich took over, you transferred your love to Baylor. Then after the incident, or the many incidents, you were without a team, and you declared before the season that UT was going to be your new team. So
Yep. You
must be feeling pretty good.
I felt amazing. It was so fun to root for them. You know, it was late, you know, West Coast time, Saturday night, and I was just, you know, exhausted, really. I mean, in a weird 21st century kind of way after watching football for 12 hours. But, you know, it's like that game was just so amazing. Hats off to them playing amazing, holding USC's offense to just, you know, a very low scoring output and just, you know, UT looking up. Good for them.
So, Ryan, what else do you have to add? Any other games that stood out?
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I want to say is after the first 2 weeks where we had some really high ranked versus high ranked matchups, week three, we're like, it's kind of a letdown week, you know, not as good as the first two. That might have been a more entertaining week than we had in weeks one and two, top to bottom. The morning games, afternoon games, there was some real great stuff. And I think the whole day started on a huge high note with the UCLA-Memphis game. Super fun. We were pretty adamant here on Take the Points that the over was an unbelievable play in that game. So 48-45, that over hit in the third quarter.
Yep.
And so just great. It was an awesome way to start the day. That crowd was fantastic. They were all drenched in sweat. Apparently every single concession stand was out of bottled water by the third quarter in Memphis at the Liberty Bowl. So just an awesome environment. It was really cool. And just continued throughout the day. So fun week three, really fun.
I do want to talk about Clemson briefly and Florida, Tennessee, and also Mississippi State, LSU. But I wanted to start this at the top of the show and I forgot. Spillett, I would like to personally apologize to you because I was skeptical of your pick of Memphis, and they came out and not only covered the spread but outright won. But also you said that Vanderbilt and Georgia would be the two teams that the SEC East came down to, and That seemed like a great prediction. Or, I mean, it didn't seem like a great prediction, picking Vanderbilt, no. But it turned out to be an amazing prediction. I was wrong. You were right. So feel free to gloat and feel free to talk about the Vanderbilt Commodores.
Well, the Vanderbilt Commodores are just playing great football. I mean, the last 2 years, but best definitely last year here on Take the Points, this was kind of the year of the over. And this year is the year of the under. Lots of great under bets out there. And I think Vandy's the perfect under team. They play great defense. Any team that can do that and beat Bill Snyder, you know, that's a great notch on your belt and a great confidence booster. That is a super hard out of conference game when you know you got to have to play in the rough and tumble SEC. So Vandy looked great, and I'm excited to see them continue to grow, especially as they bring in some good recruits on the offensive end.
That's a nice segue, because I agree. I was thinking that on Saturday. Defense is back. Not that offense has necessarily gone away. You've still got your Penn States and USC's and Josh Rosen's, et cetera. But the Clemson D looks like the best unit in America. They're my number one team after this week. And we're creating a new award, which we're going to announce now. It's called the Tim Allen Award for people who play like a real man. I'm going to get the Tim Allen grunt sound, and we're going to use that going forward. But this week's Tim Allen Award goes to the Clemson defense, all of them. By the way, Tim Allen, who I now follow on Twitter, apparently still milking the grunt for everything it's worth. He's even created a hashtag. It's hashtag RRR, which is a hashtag for the grunt.
I love it.
I'm not going to do it, but I will get a sound drop to put in here later after the fact.
I'm going to start signing all my emails with that.
Hashtag RRR. You should do that.
Yep. RRR.
Somebody's going to know what it means. All right, Spill It. That was pretty good. We're going to, instead of getting a drop, you're going to be the new Tim Allen sound.
I love it.
So Florida, Tennessee was an amazing finish, and everybody's talked about the Hail Mary. By the time you listen to this, we're recording on Tuesday night as usual. You'll have seen a million clips. I would like to talk about how this was an unbelievable gambling moment, because we said the under was our under of the week last week, and I believe it was 49.5. And of course, 26-20, that's 46 points, very close. Had this game gone into overtime, there is a very, very good chance that we would have seen a bunch of field goals, and we would have gone to 4 OT, and then at some point, we would have lost, because they would have just kept kicking field goals until somebody won in the seventh overtime. So thank you, Tyree Cleveland and Felipe Franks, for your 63-yard Hail Mary. Hail Mary is the wrong word, because there was no defense.
None. Zero. Good job, Butch Jones. Great. Just hats off.
We're going to talk about Butch Jones a little later, so we'll spare him for now, but that was an exciting finish. And then who wants to talk about Mississippi State's absolute domination of LSU, who we thought was going to be very good this year?
Sure, I will. Nick Fitzgerald, 4 touchdowns, 15-23, 180 yards, 2 touchdowns, 14 carries, 88 yards, 2 touchdowns against LSU, who, you know, continues to have offensive problems, but still has an elite defense. So if you beat them 37-7, you've caught my attention.
So I put together my own rankings. I didn't see the rankings earlier today that just came out, but I'm putting Clemson number 1, Bama 2, Oklahoma 3. My number 4 team, Oklahoma State, and then Penn State, USC 5-6. Dan, I assume you agree, since you're the number 1 Oklahoma State fan who's not actually an alumni or living in the state of Oklahoma.
Yeah, I love Oklahoma State this year. I've liked them for a long time. You know, a couple things about this Oklahoma State team. You know, obviously they have the offensive power, to, you know, compete with anybody, but it just feels like it could be their year to finally make it to the playoff and to go really far. You know, Heisman odds right now, I just would like to talk about that real quick, if you don't mind.
I do want to talk about the Heisman, not the players itself, but I have a question for you afterwards. But go ahead.
Just kind of get off track a little bit. You like Penn State running back Saquon Barkley, who's currently sitting at 9-1. I like Mason Rudolph, who's sitting at 8-1. Sam Darnold, USC quarterback, sitting at 6-1. And any guesses on who the favorite and what the odds are?
Baker Mayfield at 4.
You are correct, Ryan. It is Mayfield at +175.
What
the hell is going on? So if you wager on that, you are an idiot. That is the worst return ever. But I think we're going to have the opportunity to see Mayfield first Rudolph 2 times this year. So really look forward to that. And in the meantime, I hope that each team continues to win and is each hopefully undefeated by the first time they play. And, yeah, I expect one of those two teams to be in the playoff, and it just feels like really even in a coin flip, and I feel in a huge, championship environment, I'll give the coaching edge to Mr. Gundy. So we'll see if they can get it done. But so far, so good. They've looked great. They've covered all 3 weeks. It's been over all 3 weeks. Last week they had 4 wide receivers catch over 100 yards. Or, sorry, the four players on the team. But I don't think I've ever seen 4 players get 100 yards receiving in one game. That's almost impossible when you think about it. So they got a lot of weapons. They're well coached. They got a veteran quarterback. You got NFL talent all over the field. Oklahoma State Cowboys, ride the wave.
All right, here's my Heisman-related question. I don't want to talk about players. It's way too early. But I was thinking about the Heisman Trophy for our lifetime, let's just say the last 20, 25 years, and pretty much, it goes to the player with the best stats or the best or most important player on the best team. But for the most part, you take the running back with the best stats, the quarterback with the best stats, the best player on the best team. You invite those 3 to New York with maybe a couple other guys, and one of those people wins. Now we live in an era where the entire planet has shifted on its axis or something. And Josh Rosen and Mason Rudolph both throw for 500 yards a week. How do we judge the Heisman Award now in an era where everybody's throwing for insane stats? Should numbers matter anymore? Should Baker Mayfield leading his team to an impressive win over Ohio State be more important than Rosen and Mason Rudolph putting up huge numbers? How do we judge the Heisman going forward for this year?
Well, I think one of the it's a great question, Tom. One of the things that I think they're looking at now, I feel they're looking at now, is it's not necessarily how great their stats are. It's how great they are compared to previous years. So I don't think Baker Mayfield's necessarily getting judged on what he's doing this season. It is in comparison to what he did last season. If he puts up significantly better numbers and his team keeps winning, then he's going to be, you know, one of the favorites. I think that's what killed a guy like McCaffrey, right? Because he still was amazing. His numbers were still ridiculous, but they weren't as good as the year before. So he didn't get as far in the voting. So sure. I think that's kind of what they look at, is they want to see that improvement, a guy that not only has a good team and good stats, but a significant jump in one, either all their stats or one particular stat, whether it's, you know, completion percentage or yards per carry or touchdowns in general.
Dan, what do you think?
I feel like you have to change how you view the numbers kind of on who they play. Like, if you put up 300 yards in the SEC, I think that's equivalent to like 450 in the Pac-12. So it's kind of like some sort of scale like that.
Okay, yeah. I was thinking along those same lines. We call this the Ron Dane theorem. Ron Dane used to run for 400 yards against Northern Illinois and 46 yards against Penn State and Michigan. And he won the Heisman just based on his overall numbers. I think we need to look at numbers versus quality of play. Phil Steele can just figure this out. We don't really need a panel.
Correct.
But let's look at what conference they play in. Let's look at in-conference versus out-of-conference stats. you can basically wipe out any stats from, you know, non-Power 5 and definitely from the cupcake schools. And then let's look at, I think in baseball they call it, is it VORP? Or what's the one where it's like...
VORP.
Is it VORP?
Winnings above replacement or whatever, yeah.
And that's the stat that determines like how good they are compared to a generic average person at that position, right?
Right.
Okay, I think we need to implement that war into football. So a combination of war as well as stats that are like weighted, like how we took AP calculus and somebody else who took basic math, you know, we both get a 90, but our 90 counts as like a 110. Their 90 counts as like a 82. So.
Right. Yeah. Like a weighted GPA. Exactly.
Yes. So again, call Phil Steele. He'll tell you what the answer is. And we'll go from there.
We'll start tweeting at him right now.
That's right. All right. Well, let's take a quick break, and then we will break down the big games of week four. Be right back. We're back, folks. It is time to get into the big games of week four, and we're going to start with one of the biggest. I am very happy because we seem to always start with the same teams over and over when we do the big games. Your Alabamas, LSUs, Oklahomas, Ohio State. Today, we are going to start with Mississippi State at Georgia, which is actually the best matchup, in my opinion, of the week. So, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Georgia is a 6.5-point favorite. The over-under is 48.5. Mississippi State 3-0 against the spread this season. Georgia also 3-0 against the spread this season. So, Dan, take it away.
SEC football, have to love it. You know, just when we think that Tennessee and Florida are going to, you know, provide us with an awful, unwatchable football game, which they did for the first 49 minutes or so.
97%.
Yeah, even more than that, correction. About 3.5 minutes to go in the game. And then it comes back, and it turns out to be a Hail Mary-ish ending, and then you're like, wow, this is why I watch the SEC every week on CBS. And then this week, you actually get a really good game, and you get Georgia hosting Mississippi State. First, let's talk about Georgia. They've won on the road. They've beaten Notre Dame with a backup quarterback, a very talented one. They aren't scoring a ton of points with him. They haven't really opened up the playbook. They're being conservative, but they're winning games. You know, they're not, you know, winning, you know, some high-scoring matchup with anybody, but they're just being smart. They're, you know, winning kind of like how Alabama used to win when they were first kind of, you know, establishing themselves 10 years ago. So anyway, Georgia's look great, and they're at home. Coming in is Mississippi State, fresh off a 37-7 smacking of LSU. Yes, LSU has their offensive woes, but 37-7 is an impressive statement. Nick Fitzgerald, 4 touchdowns, no picks, looking like pretty much unstoppable the whole game. He's now rocketed into the Heisman campaign as well, and if you were to put a couple you know, wagers in, I would maybe recommend him because of the conference he plays in. That being said, the spread is too high. Kirby Smart likes to play these close, you know, field goal-ish type games. I hope Georgia only wins if they do by a field goal or less, and they don't score a full touchdown later. But right off the bat, we're going to go trap of the week. We're going to take Mississippi State in the 6.5 on the road with Nick Fitzgerald. I like the points. It's just too much. I think they can win outright. If not, I think it can be very close. So we're going to roll with that. Pick one, trap of the week, Mississippi State Bulldogs.
I'm with you 100%. Same logic. I won't bother reiterating. Take the points. Ryan.
Well, as you established earlier, I am on the Georgia bandwagon, but it is too many points. I think this line should be 3.5 max. It's 6.5 is just way too high of a number for an SEC game like this with a freshman quarterback. So even though I am on the Georgia bandwagon and I think Georgia has a shot to win this game, I don't see them winning it by more than 3 points.
All right. So take the points. Official recommendation is to take the points.
Yeah. So, yes, sir. Well said.
Right. There's a reason we have named this podcast what we named it.
Uh-huh.
All right. Mr. Spillett, this one's all you. The Alabama Crimson Tide go into Tennessee to play another cupcake. Oh, wait. No, they go in to play 3-0 SEC East leading Vanderbilt. 3:30 p.m., Alabama minus 18.5. A very respectable line if you're a Vanderbilt fan. Over under 43.5. Break it down for us, Ryan.
Well, I think you can pretty much put the bankroll on the under. Again, we've said Vanderbilt's got a great defense. We obviously know what Alabama can do. I think this is going to be a game that has a chance to be potentially the shortest game of the week. The clock will not stop in this game. It could get done in like 68 real-time minutes. It's insane that no one's going to score. I think Vanderbilt keeps it under the number. So for me, I'm taking the points. But I'm not going to bet Alabama to lose the game. I'm just going to take the points.
Well, you're not allowed. Dan and I have made a rule.
Yep, it's real simple. Yeah, historically, Alabama likes to cover on the road in these kind of situations. I remember a couple years ago they were playing against Tennessee in a very similar situation. People were talking of Tennessee, but we knew they were obviously fraudulent. But it was a similar kind of 18.5-point spread, and they beat them by like 40. I'm going to completely stay away from this. The over-under's low, and it's just too low for me for college football. And it's a lot of points to cover for a team on the road facing a 3-0 squad. So if I do anything, it would be a lean to the over, as crazy as that is. But I don't think anything's worth any wager in this game.
All right. I don't have a particularly strong feeling, but you know my feeling in general on Alabama and Nick Saban. There's no way I'm going to roll with a newfound decent Vanderbilt team who hasn't really... Maybe they have proven themselves because Kansas State's very good, but there's no way I'm going to jump on Vanderbilt this early in the season, and certainly not against Alabama. So small wager on Alabama. Again, they've struggled to cover the lines against two weaker teams in the past 2 weeks. So seems like they're just here to get the job done and make their way to the SEC meet of the schedule and the SEC championship game. And it's almost as if Nick Saban's holding back on us a little. And so I don't think I'll bet a lot, but if I had to pick and the motto of the year is go hard, then I'll lay it with Alabama. TCU at Oklahoma State, 3:30 p.m. Oklahoma State opened at -9, has already leapt up to -13. Big money going in on Oklahoma State. The over-under 70.5, that probably will have gone up by the time you hear this also. Dan, talk about your favorite coach, your favorite team.
Sure. This total opened at an absurd 63.5 on Sunday morning.
That's poor. Poor decision, Las Vegas.
Bad move. It's only moved up a full touchdown in 48 hours, which means no one has bet the under. I'm pretty sure they have no under tickets in the state of Nevada. It's crazy because as soon as it came out, I was like, wow, over. And then it was like 67.5 last night. And I was talking to Ryan going, huh, it still moved to 67.5. You know what? I don't care. I still like the over. Well, guess what? It's 70.5 and I still like the over. So I really don't care. TCU will score. This is a huge game for TCU. Historically, Patterson's been awful in Stillwater. People say he's been looking forward to this one. Yeah, yada, yada. They say that every year. Oklahoma State is just too good. I think they're going to win this game by about 21 points. I'm going to say they win it something like 49-27. So I'm going to take the over, but I'm not going to lay the points.
Ryan?
Well, Tom, as you know, I am one of the bigger Kenny Trill fans out there.
You're the last one.
Last one.
Yep. Well, the thing about Trill is...
No, two. Johnny Manziel still likes him.
That's true.
Sorry, it's two.
The thing about Trill is I like the guy. I love the way he plays. The last thing you want from him is to be down two scores. When he presses, he is Jeff George. It's just throw it as far as I can. Don't give a shit. As hard as I can get it in that window. Like, he's a turnover machine. This is by far the best defense Gundy's ever had. It's not even remotely close. And I think they turned that into at least – let's go ahead and set that over-under on picks at 2.5. But I'm going to say 2 pick-sixes for Kenny Trill.
Wow.
Ooh.
Take it to the bank.
That's a bold choice. All right. So all that needs to be said about Oklahoma State has been said. Let me try to put in a good word for TCU before I pick against them. So Kenny Trill has proven himself as a competent quarterback, and he's had a nice second act at TCU, and kudos to him for that. I think that Oklahoma State has not been tested like this. I know they played Pitt last week, but this year's Pitt team is just not that great. They're down by Pitt standards, which is mediocre to begin with. As James Franklin said, you know, they're just a second Akron.
Yeah.
Let's see. TCU, I think they keep it close in the first half. And eventually, as you said, Oklahoma State just has too many weapons. This year's Oklahoma State defense is what separates them from previous Oklahoma State teams that could score a ton. That's why they're my fourth pick in the country this week. If for some reason the playoff was this week, which would be weird, they would be my 4 seed. But I do think having to face the best team they've played so far and the first conference game, it's going to be close for a little while, and Oklahoma State kind of blows the doors off them late. So, Dan, I like your pick, like a 47-24.
Yep, perfect.
So I'll take the minus 13, actually, instead of the over.
Okay, that's fine.
Penn State at Iowa, ABC night game. They've moved, you guys will love this, they've moved the Big Ten night games to 7:30 p.m. because the only people left in the Midwest are elderly senior citizens who can't stay up late enough. And me also. I guess I'm not in the Midwest, but all Big Ten fans go to bed early now. And I'm one of them. And so I'm very happy for this. Penn State is a 12.5-point favorite. Over-under's 52. Both teams unbeaten. I've got some stats for you guys, so I'll start first on this. Iowa, so the over-under 52. Iowa averaging 33 points a game. Penn State averaging 47 points a game. That's 80 total points. And I know what you're thinking. These were against some inferior talent. And so now it's conference play and things will tighten up. Well, Iowa's only played one good team. That was Iowa State. They're not even that great. And how much did Iowa give up? 41. Penn State has scored 30 or more in their last 10, count them, 10 games in a row, which is some kind of Penn State record, at least since the 94 season. Penn State's only allowing 14 points a game, but again, that's against lesser competition. So I don't see any reason to stay away from the over in this game. Now, it might not come in, but at least that's the smart bet. So I think roll with Penn State and points until proven otherwise. And that's what I had to say about that. Penn State 12-1 last 13 games against the spread also. So consider a hook. I think that Iowa, again, just like we said last game, they keep it close early. Eventually, Penn State's just too much for them. And then I was going to add, the last time I felt this confident as a Penn State fan playing against Iowa was the 09 season where Penn State was undefeated going into that game. And that one did not work out great. So that little nostalgia flashback makes me a little nervous, but all of the numbers point to Penn State overhook. So that's what I'm doing.
All right, Tom, that all sounds accurate and researched and mathematically correct. And they've covered 12 out of 13. and they're a better team. And this spread's only 12.5 because it's a night game. But every single year, there's a night game in the Big Ten where the home team isn't that good, and they find a way to keep it close and or win. I'm going to say it's this week. I'm going to take Iowa in the 12.5.
So what kind of score are you looking at? Because I will say I like the over a little bit better. And I could see like a 31-27 or something like that, which still would get it.
I actually am going opposite again, Tom. I like the under in this game. I like a sloppy game with field goals, a 23-20 type game.
Wow. All right. Wow.
There's that.
Ryan, so, break the tie.
Ryan is working on some Cheetos, and there he is.
All right. I don't have much to say about this game. I am not a big Iowa believer. I've never liked Iowa. I think their coach blows. I think Penn State's rolling. They know they have to keep rolling. Ohio State lost. This is their chance to prove themselves and prove a point, especially in the polls. They need style points. I'm going to take Penn State on a big number.
Yeah, some assholes have even moved Oklahoma State ahead of Penn State, including me just
now. Yeah.
So I'm with you. Style points. Akram Wadley for Iowa will run in a couple touchdowns, but it won't be enough. Notre Dame at Michigan State. I debated whether this should be considered a big game, but it's 8 p.m. It's on NBC, the official channel of the Irish. Notre Dame is the 4.5-point favorite, and the over-under is 54. Who wants to take this? Because I don't have any thoughts. Michigan State is a stay-away team in general for me. You can't trust them.
This is a weird game. This game happens every year, and I've never picked it right, ever. I'm like 0 for 10. You can go back and listen to all the Take the Points podcasts every week. There's no chance I've ever gotten this game right. So let's continue to get it wrong. I'll lay the points with Notre Dame. That's all I got.
All right, let's move along.
That's really all we got to say about that.
We're going to get into conference play, and we're going to go through by conference since it is the first week of conference play for most teams. But first, a very important game that Dan would like to talk about, which is New Mexico at Tulsa. Dan texted me earlier, said he wanted to talk about this. He said it was Tulsa minus 11, and he had a pick. Since you texted me, it is now Tulsa minus 12. So, what is your pick?
Hey, Tom,
does that affect it?
No, it does not affect it. This is week four's lock of the week. Tulsa minus 12 points. Sounds good. Oh, boy. This is a complicated one. Sometimes in college football, everything just lines up. And this is one of those rare spots. Okay, Tulsa, as you know, as a college football fan, always finishes around 500, right? Next week, they play on the road at Navy. They're currently 1-2 at home against New Mexico. You do the math. This is a game that they're going to win. Two, they like to score a lot of points. They played Oklahoma State week one. I mean, come on. It's not their fault that they lost 59-24. Since then, they've played two high-scoring games, including scoring a total of 117 points the last 2 weeks. The problem is they've given up a lot of points as well. Well, guess who comes to, they're at home. Guess who comes to town this week? Well, that's the New Mexico, Lobos. Yes, the Aggies are state. Well, I'm sorry about that, America. So the Lobos come to town.
Nobody knows, Lobos. Dan. I mean, you could have said it was the New Mexico Walter Whites. Like,
yes.
Nobody outside of New Mexico actually knows the answer to that.
That is true. Okay, fair enough and good point. New Mexico's coming to town. Can they take advantage of this horrible defense of Tulsa? I'm going to say no. Why? Because their quarterback's out. Oh, wait, no, he's not out. The first and second string quarterbacks are out. And who's the third string quarterback? I went deep and did some research. You guys are going to love this. This is the first game this man has played quarterback since he was in high school. He is a graduate transfer from Arizona State. His last name shares the same last name as a certain running back who played with Andrew Luck at Stanford.
Gerhardt.
That is correct. He's been playing on the Arizona State baseball team the last 4 years. And also on the side, he played a little, football for Arizona State, but did he play quarterback? No. He played defense. So this guy's been playing safety for Todd Graham the last 4 years, transfers in, the first two quarterbacks are hurt. He came in for his first emergency relief appearance last week, went 7-13 with an interception. This isn't good. Tulsa's winning this game by 35 points. And just one little icing on the cake moment, you would think maybe New Mexico can, you know, weather the storm because they got a veteran head coach in Bob Davey. He's got nothing going on in his life, right? Normal week for him. Well, I don't know if you've been reading the news. Big scandal involving New Mexico and Bob Davey on the cover of Pro Football Talk. Apparently, when players have been coming in to give their samples for their little drug tests, they've been, like, taking them and throwing them in the garbage. And I guess during player exit interviews, they've been basically throwing him under the bus. And he will be fired any moment now. So he's got bigger things on his mind than preparing a guy who hasn't played quarterback in 6 years to play a road game. So when you add all that up, Tulsa's going to win this game by at least 3 touchdowns. Love Tulsa. Lock of the week.
Dan, kudos. I'm going to give you a slow golf clap for that. First off, I knew none of that, I will readily admit. But as soon as you started talking and you said, can New Mexico handle ... my mind immediately went to, well, I don't know what's coming next, but their coach is Bob Davey, so no, they cannot handle it.
You got a scandal and a third-string quarterback who hasn't played in 6 years, so not good.
I did not know there was a scandal, and he'll be out. So what other former Notre Dame coach could possibly come, and who's available to step in, Dan? Is there any overrated?
Charlie Weiss is always available.
Charlie Weiss can pick up a third paycheck. He can still get paid from Notre Dame. He could still get paid from Kansas. He can pick up a third check.
Correct.
Come on, Weiss.
He's available. So
bring New Mexico back to the basement where they belong.
I can't wait to wager on that game and keep an eye on Saturday. As crazy it is.
These last couple years where both New Mexico teams were average, it's been really messing with my head. I'd like to return to an era, you know, 2014 and before, where we could consistently bet against these teams.
Every week, yeah.
All right, thank you, Dan. I will be wagering a lot of money on that. All right, folks, what we're going to do now, we're going to just go through each conference. I'll name all of the games and lines, and then Dan and Ryan can just talk about any games that interest them, lines they like, over-unders, whatever. And anything we don't have a strong opinion on, we'll just skip it. So we'll start in the ACC. Pittsburgh at Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech -7.5. Toledo at Miami, Florida. Mark Richt's second game of the year. -13.5. Wake Forest, the surging Wake Forest, visits Appalachian State, where they are a 4.5-point favorite. Duke UNC, Duke -3. NC State goes to Florida State in what could be a tricky game for the Seminoles. That's Florida State -11. Spill it. I know you got an opinion on this, but we got Old Dominion at Virginia Tech -27. And then Boston College at Clemson, where the line is 34.5, which seems like it seems high, but that's a lot of respect for the defending champs. So, Dan, take it away.
Right off the top, Pitt at Georgia Tech. Pitt just faced the spread of Oklahoma State and got shredded. Now they got to go on the road, go down to Atlanta, and go play the power option team at Georgia Tech. I think that's going to be really hard on Pitt. I think that game could really get out of control fast. If it wasn't for all that crazy information about New Mexico, that this was going to be my actual lock of the week. So love Georgia Tech -7.5. Outside of that, not too much in the ACC this week. Duke UNC is a little strange. Duke being a road favorite. I know Ryan was just talking to me about that.
Stay away from that game.
It's very hard. And Miami, I just haven't seen enough of them. You know, it's kind of a shame that their quarterback went pro last year, because if Kyle would have came back, they could have been really, really, really good this year. But
they still,
you know,
could be. They haven't really played any games. They've only played the one game. So
we'll find out.
Stay away from that one, too, and let's see
very
what happens.
Yeah.
Ryan, please tell me you're picking Va Tech over the newly reinstated football program of Old Dominion, who's only been around for a few years.
I am, Tom. Rest assured I am going big on Vatek this week. Love Vatek. Loved them all year. They're really starting to hit their stride. This is their last, you know, cupcake before they get into the conference. So this is a great chance for them to, you know, iron out some wrinkles. I sometimes worry about a big number with that. But I think this is a team that's just really rounding into form, especially after watching Memphis and seeing their former coach now, Justin Fuente, gives me even more confidence in them going forward. So I really like Vatek. You know, that number doesn't scare me off. I agree with Dan. My personal lock of the week was definitely Georgia Tech. I think that that has to be two touchdowns. There's just no reason 7.5 makes no sense. You know, the home field, the travel, like Dan said, that's the biggest thing that, I take away is to prepare for a spread and then to prepare for the option. It's impossible. It's to ask that of a team that just got embarrassed on national TV. Like, they're just not going to do it. They're going to get slaughtered. That game could get really out of hand, like 43-13 out of hand. Staying away from Duke UNC for sure. That Clemson number is a little too scary. Yeah, pretty light week in the ACC, but I definitely really, really love Georgia Tech, and I really love Vatek.
Vatek is an interesting team to me because we picked them last week to cover a big spread, which we thought was actually too low, which was 21 against the hapless East Carolina Pirates. And I tuned in sometime around the second quarter, I think, and it was 21-21, and I was like, oh, come on, man. East Carolina finally decides to play, or maybe Virginia Tech's overrated. So I, you know, flip over to another game. Later, I'm checking the ESPN app, assuming I'd lost that. Oh, they put up 64 points, and yeah, they covered easily. So I'm rolling with Virginia Tech again. The SEC, UMass at Tennessee, Tennessee minus 27, Louisiana Tech at South Carolina, who now has no Deebo Samuel, so we're going to say stay away from them. Florida, yeah, at Kentucky, Florida minus 3. Auburn at Missouri, Auburn minus 19. The Cuse goes down to LSU. LSU coming off that huge loss with revenge on their mind against the Cuse. They're going to take it out on the Cuse for sure, but it's 23.5. And then Arkansas and Texas A&M on a neutral field. Texas A&M minus 2.5. Dan.
Sure. A whole bunch of thoughts always on the SEC. It's the best conference. Let me save A&M Arkansas for later. I like the over in Florida, Kentucky. It's low. It's only 44. I think somehow, some way, that game finds a way to get over. What else in the SEC this week?
How about the Cuse?
That is hard. Okay, yeah. So Syracuse is getting 23.5 at Louisville, and yet Missouri's getting 19.5 at home against Auburn. Well, this makes no sense to me because Auburn and LSU are pretty much the same team. They have no offense. They have an amazing defense. They each have a loss. One loss was by more, but in each loss, both teams scored barely any points. And now one's hosting Syracuse, and one's got to go on the road at Missouri. Now, Missouri is not good. They just got worked by Purdue. But Auburn just scored 24 points against, like, a no-name team last week. Like,
Mercer.
That was the game. Yeah, Mercer. You can't score 24 and then go on the road and lay 19 to another SEC school. I don't care how bad they are, unless they're named Kentucky. And they're not. So I actually like Missouri in this game. I know it sounds crazy, but I just the Auburn offense is horrible. They haven't scored more than, 27 points the whole year? And they're laying 19.5 on the road in the SEC? That's just, I can't do it. So I like Missouri. But I will talk about Arkansas A&M. This is the total of the week, folks. We're going to go under 54.5. Both coaches are on the extreme hot seat. You could argue that the loser of this game could get canned as early as Monday, even though I don't think either will. A&M's offense finally came alive in the second half last week to Louisiana, but that was against them. On the flip side, Arkansas just played a 28-7 stinker against TCU, a spread Big 12 team. This game's played in the Jerry Dome, big crowd, a little bit more nerves. 54.5 is a lot of points for each of these two teams to score. If you average it out, that's 27. I don't think it gets there. I think a little nervousness kicks in, and I think this game finishes in the low 40s. So, total of the week, we're going to go under 54.5 A&M Arkansas.
All right, I'm with you on the Auburn-Missouri game for sure. Auburn, I just did some quick math in my head. They are averaging, you want to guess how many points this year per game?
About 16.
Yeah, you're right, about 6, 17.
18.
Yeah.
And the spread is 19. And listen, they've played better defenses than Missouri. Well, they played one better defense than Missouri. So the other two actually were worse. So
good point, good point.
Let's take those points, folks.
Yeah, screw it.
All right, Ryan?
Well, Dan pretty much nailed the SEC. He's always on that. So I don't have a lot to say about these games. I love the under in that Arkansas A&M. That's I'm all on board on that. One thing I want to add about the SEC is our favorite coach, Bob Big Game Poops.
Oh, God.
Oh, God is right. You know what he did? Tom, Sunday?
I do know. That's why I'm sighing. But you go ahead and tell everyone.
Bob Stoops decided to go on to scout.com to pull up the list of every recruit that Tennessee was going after and to start following them on Twitter. Every recruit on Tennessee's list is now being followed by Bob Stoops. If that doesn't tell you something, I don't know what will. That is a terrible sign for Butch, and I hope he gets fired on the field in front of the whole crowd.
Butch.
Listen, folks, two wrongs don't make a right. Now, Butch Jones should not be the coach of Tennessee come January 2018. But just because you have to get rid of your coach and you don't necessarily have a prospect lined up doesn't mean you should just go to the well and get Mr. Bob Stoops. And Dan, you want to add to that?
Yeah, no. I was just going to add about the current head coach, Butch Jones. Again, hello to all the listeners on the covers forum, if there are any. But in the prediction for last week's game, I believe we said that Butch Jones was a, quote, what'd I say? He's a total mess and he's a total joke and I feel horrible for the whole state of Tennessee. We were predicting a low scoring game, but it actually got worse when he forgot to play defense on a Hail Mary. So that just shows you how low it is in Tennessee. Just when you think it can't get worse, it actually got worse. He should be completely fired. I can't believe that guy's the head coach. It's the number one most absurd thing going on in 2017 college football. It really is. That guy's a head coach.
My favorite Butch Jones story of the week is there is a barbershop in Tennessee that has put up a sign saying they refuse to give anyone the Butch Jones haircut going forward because they don't want to be associated with him at all.
That's amazing.
Good.
That's just the best news story of the week. Bravo.
All right. Big Ten, not a ton going on. We already talked about Penn State, Iowa, and Michigan State, Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. So UNLV at Ohio State, 40.5 point big line. Rutgers coming off a big win, 65-0. They go to Nebraska favored by 13.5. And then the one remaining interesting game to me is Michigan at Purdue. Michigan is a 9.5 point favorite against the surging Purdue Boilermakers. So does anybody have thoughts on any of these?
Yeah, sure. Right off the bat, Michigan-Purdue, I think on paper, I think it looks like Purdue is the play. They're 3-0, 3-0 against the spread. New coach, scoring some points, a lot of energy, just beat Missouri. Do keep in mind that people are, you know, ripping the Michigan offense for not being great. They still put up 430-plus total yards of offense on Florida. They kind of just wanted a conference win to get out of the way. This seems to be the kind of game where, like, in the past, I don't know. I mean, obviously, every game is totally different. I could be wrong. But in the past, I personally have made mistakes putting money on a team like Purdue in the situation where the real team actually shows up and hits them around pretty good. So if I had to bet that one, I would bet Michigan. The other game that I do really like in the Big Ten, unfortunately, is the Ohio State Buckeyes. This is classic 56-0. Every year they play, I think, UNLV or something like this, and they always cover it. So Ohio State and Michigan, shocker. Those are my picks.
Kudos to Ohio State and Urban Meyer, by the way, for saying, oh, it's the start of conference play. We're just going to bring in UNLV.
Yep. Assholes.
Of course.
Moving along to the Big 12. Only one game left to talk about, and that is Oklahoma at Baylor. Oklahoma minus 28. Dan, you said that Baylor was going to improve last week, and they did okay. They pushed against Duke, so you were right. Yeah. Well, both of us were wrong,
sneaky,
actually. But what are we looking at this week?
That's because, I would like to first attribute last week to the Zach Mills Award heating up to the real reason why that went down. Oklahoma's going to crush him by a million points. Ryan's got a good point he should make about this game.
Oh, so, Tom, as a degenerate gambler like we are, you know that every year in the summer, before anything happens, a couple places in Vegas, specifically the Golden Nugget, will put out their list of the games of the year. And they have the lines out there in, usually like July or early August, they put out lines for the game of the year. Tom, what do you think the line was on Baylor, Oklahoma in August?
In August?
When the Golden Nugget released a line that you could bet on in August, what was that number?
I have no idea. I don't see why it should be much different. I mean, we knew Baylor was going to be bad going into the season. At least I did, but I assume other people thought Baylor was going to be better, so I'm going to say, 12?
8.5.
Wow.
Heard it on a podcast. Guy was talking about how he had done a lot of research on how bad Baylor was going to be because his son is heading there as a freshman, not a football player, just as a student.
Wait, his son is going to the school, so he's like, let me see how much this place sucks.
Yep.
Basically, yes. Well, he's a sports radio guy, but
right.
He basically told his son, I need to pay your tuition at Baylor somehow. I'm betting all of it on Oklahoma in August. And he's just sitting on a ticket to basically pay his son's tuition with Baylor getting slaughtered. So that was what I wanted to bring up is the real degenerates. You know, make sure you guys try to make that trip out to Vegas in August. You can bet some lines. Dan and I did it a few years ago when Taj Boyd was heading. Was it Taj Boyd or was it?
It was Taj Boyd's senior season.
Senior year was going to the Carrier Dome, and it was opened at 8 points in Las Vegas. And Dan and I got in the car and drove the 5 hours to Las Vegas with a big pile of cash from my landlord, who was putting my rent money that month on that game on Clemson. So thank you for covering Clemson. So there's money to be made. So check that out. Always keep an eye on that in August. There's some value here and there.
Texas Tech at Houston. Oh, we're in the Pac-12 now. Wait, that is definitely not a Pac-12 game. Anyway.
Kind of.
Close enough.
Let's just call it the West Coast. So
yeah.
Texas Tech at Houston. Houston -5.5. Oregon at Arizona State. UCLA at Stanford. Both teams coming off rough losses. Washington at Colorado. We don't really know how good Colorado is still. And then USC at undefeated Cal. Who would have thought USC going to Cal would be the big game of the Pac-12?
Not me. Okay, a lot of thoughts as usual. Love the Pac-12. First off, Utah at Arizona. If Arizona and Rich Rod don't win this game, they will start the season 1-7. They are not winning their next four games. The schedule gets really hard.
That's a Friday night game, so I left that one off, but I'm glad you got thoughts.
Yeah, no problem. The total's also 61. I think that's too high. Keep in mind, Utah's got the best kicker in America. I think he's leading the country in points. He's got like 55, which is absurd through three games. He's perfect on all field goals and extra points. That stuff's important in college football. Washington State's laying 28 points. I'd probably lay it with them again. Nice to see Luke for 6 touchdowns last week, even though we called 7, so we're not always right. Sorry about that.
So close.
Oregon visits Arizona State, who the last couple of years they haven't been good, but before that they've covered at almost a historic rate here. I think 15-5 over the last 20 years. Arizona State's going to get hammered, as usual with Oregon, I'm afraid of a backdoor, so I probably won't bet a side. The total is a high 75, but if you want to have some fun on late Saturday night, you can do worse than betting the over in this game. Washington handled Colorado last year. Colorado's worse. Washington's still pretty good. I'd probably lay it at 10.5 there in that spot. And stay away from USC and stay away from UCLA.
Ryan?
I mean, I do agree with Dan. I like what he's saying, but definitely another notch on the Rich Rod firing tour belt. It's coming.
Oh, yeah. We have a special podcast that week. It's happening this year.
Write your eulogies. Oh. We got a lot of eulogies to write, and much like the New York Times, I want to start writing them before the people are fired so we have them ready to go. So Sumlin, Jones, Rich Rod, there's got to be more.
Oh, I think potentially Brian Kelly, Mark D'Antonio. There's some names out there, Tom. It's going to get feisty.
For sure. And then let's also write the eulogy for Lane Kiffin's time at Florida Atlantic before he jumps into one of those jobs.
Correct.
Oh, yeah. He's going to love it over in A&M.
Notre Dame coach Lane Kiffin.
Oh, God. They can't do that.
All right. Let's keep moving because we have been doing America's favorite new segment, which is the greatest teams of our lifetime bracket. And when we come back, we're going to have another awesome matchup between 1993 Florida State and 2009 Alabama, which is going to be a very, very good one. So we'll be right back with that. All right, folks, we're back. We are getting into our new segment, the greatest teams of our lifetime. We've been doing this now for each week of the season, and we're taking what we consider the 16 best teams since 1992. We put them into a bracket, and each week we do one hypothetical matchup. So Vince Young's 2005 Texas team was our champion in the first week. In the second week, the 95 Nebraska team with Tommy Frazier was our champs. And then last week, in a really difficult one for us to pick, 99 Florida State edged out 96 Florida and Danny Werfel to move on. So this week we have another very challenging one. It's the 7-10 matchup. Our 7 seed is 1999 Florida State, led by Heisman winner Charlie Ward. And they are facing off against our 10 seed, 2009 Alabama, led by Greg McElroy and Heisman winner Mark Ingram. So I will turn it over to Ryan Spillett, and he's going to break down these teams and tell us what kind of matchup we're looking at.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate that. This is, like you said, this is another really fun matchup. Last week was awesome. The Florida versus Florida State was super fun, so I decided to run it back this week again and roll with Florida State, but this time going with the 93 Charlie Ward team. What a fun team. Charlie Ward, Heisman Trophy winner. You know, one of the first real dual threat quarterbacks that played at that high of a level and got that kind of recognition that really wasn't around back then. Unless you were a straight up option quarterback, those running quarterbacks did not get that kind of national respect, high rankings, awards, and so forth. So, really, really important person in our lifetime as far as college football goes, and then especially as he transitions into the NBA and, you know, is a New York Knicks point guard for over a decade. Like, that guy with all the Bo Jackson and Deion Sanders and the two-sport talk, like, those guys played baseball in football. Like, Charlie Ward played basketball, and that's way harder on the body. And it's just way more impressive. He played at such a high level. So always have a soft spot in my heart for Charlie Ward. That team was fantastic. They just had a great season. They you know, beat everybody as they went through and had some really classic matchups, but just, you know, came up ahead every time. And then going against the 09 Alabama Crimson Tide, kind of that first championship team of the start of this dynasty. You know, McElroy, Ingram, you know, all those studs like Julio Jones and Marcel Darius were super young freshmen, sophomores on that team. And you know, they became super, superstars later on. So this was kind of just the start. But McElroy was just accurate beyond all belief, super solid. You know, he is the prototype for the Nick Saban quarterback for years and years until Jalen Hurts, you know, kind of broke the mold. You know, but McElroy's fantastic. He was so good, and Ingram was just unstoppable. And then the one thing I do want to add while we talk about this, because of Ingram's success as a Heisman, I believe the first ever sophomore Heisman winner that season. I'm pretty sure he was the first ever sophomore to win the Heisman.
That sounds like it might be true, but I don't know.
Tom, I remember watching that Heisman Trophy ceremony at a Chinese buffet on Thompson Road in Erie.
Oh, no.
Ooh. Yeah, that's right. Erie Boulevard.
Deep cut.
Chinese buffet. I couldn't wait. I had to get in. Got a flat screen right in front of me. Had some noodles. Watched Ingram win the Heisman. So, really fun matchup. Really exciting. I think it's, you know, two phenomenal coaches again. Obviously, these teams are almost always going to have – these matchups are going to have great coaches. You know, so I'm excited to see what you guys think of the X's and O's side of things, but really excited about this matchup. Tom, what are your thoughts here? Give us some notable players. Give us some things. I got one stat I do want to add before I do turn it over to you. Through the first five games of that 93 season, linebacker Derek Brooks had scored more points than those five opponents combined. Yeah. Linebacker Derek Brooks had scored more points than the five opponents' offenses combined. That's how good he was and how dominant that defense was.
Wow.
Just want to leave that, because that's the most impressive thing I've seen in a while researching these games. Want that fresh in your mind. Tommy Z, break it down, kid.
Okay, so unfortunately, you are incorrect. Ingram was actually the third consecutive sophomore to win the Heisman, starting with Tim Tebow in 2007. It doesn't name 08 in this ESPN article, so I'm trying to think who won in 08 after Tebow and before Ingram. You could think about that, but anyway, it was another sophomore, and then Ingram the third. So unfortunately, you're not accurate about that, but it doesn't
matter. Was it Sam Bradford? Did Bradford win a Heisman?
Did he?
And then go pro the next year?
That sounds correct, yeah.
That might be it.
So I'm going to say Tebow, Bradford, and then Ingram. Okay. But he was a great player. And so I want to start, though, with 93 Florida State. We'll just talk a little bit about how the season broke down. So as you mentioned, and one thing I wanted to talk about a little more was, to me, they ushered in a new era of college football. Now, they didn't run the run and gun or the spread as you might think of it today, but they ran a more up-tempo, wide-open style than all of the teams before them, or most of the teams before them. Certainly any championship team. The team the year before was 1992 Alabama, which we'll talk about in a future week, which was the last sort of classic old-school pro-style team. And Ward just opened it up. And because of that, they were one of my favorite teams at the time. I loved watching them. Also, they were my team in NCAA football 93. They were the team I played with all the time. Dynasty
Warwick
mode.
Warwick Dunn on that B button can't stop it.
That's right. So I use them all the time. And let's not forget Kez McCorvey, who was a very underrated college football receiver. So So a couple impressive stats about the Seminoles. They led the nation in scoring offense and scoring defense in 1993, which is something. Imagine if that happened today. I mean, that's just crazy.
Awesome.
In their SEC schedule, or sorry, their ACC schedule, they won by an average of 42 points with four shutouts.
Christ.
They beat seven bowl teams, including number 21 Clemson, number 13 UNC, number 3 Miami, 15 Virginia, number 7 in-state rival Florida. Back in 93, back in those days, to beat Miami and Florida and to be like the king of the state of Florida was about the most impressive thing you could do in all of college football.
Yeah.
Yes.
They also beat number 2 Nebraska with a young Tommy Frazier and Lawrence Phillips in the Orange Bowl. They did have one loss, which was to number 2 Notre Dame in November. They called it the game of the century, and they lost that game. Charlie Ward had them on, I think, the 19-yard line, and he threw an interception in the end zone on the last play. So they just missed out on sending that to OT. This was a situation like we talked about last week with the 96 Florida Gators, where they needed a little help. Notre Dame lost to, this will tell you it was a different era. Number 1 Notre Dame lost 41-39 to Boston College the following week. And so Notre Dame was 1. They fell to 3. Florida State jumps back up to 1, and undefeated Nebraska jumps to number 2. So you've got the Florida State team that lost to Notre Dame now ahead of Notre Dame in, I believe it was the Orange Bowl against Nebraska. Still, if you ask any Notre Dame fan, I guarantee, especially you give them like a bourbon, they will still get fired up about this.
A little bit.
So if you want to annoy a Notre Dame fan, talk about this 93 season and Florida State jumping Notre Dame after losing to them. But anyway, like I said, they beat number 2 Nebraska, who was, that was the start of that Nebraska dynasty. So that was an impressive win. And as I said, I just feel like they have a special place in all of our heart because of the age we were and because they sort of changed college football. They might not have been the greatest team of our entire life. We'll find out. But definitely one of the most important. Then we had 2009 Alabama. So Ingram won the Heisman. They also had Trent Richardson, McElroy. Ryan named all the players. An unbelievable D, especially all the guys pretty much who helped them win the 11 and some from the 12 championship on that defense were all either on the bench or freshmen playing limited reps. If you look at the bench of this team, it's like the greatest bench of all time. You could argue their bench was actually better than the team that won the championship.
Yeah.
That's neither here nor there. They beat a very good Virginia Tech team week 1. They beat Ole Miss, who was ranked 20th. They beat number 22 South Carolina. They beat number 9 LSU. And Ryan and I were talking about this before we started recording. This was the first year that Alabama won a championship. They had come off a Sugar Bowl loss to Urban Meyer, ironically, the year before in the Utah Utes, and they were, I think, 11-2 or 12-2 that year, so they were good. But they weren't the team we think of now that starts preseason number 1 and just crushes everybody. So they were a little bit under the radar, and they were also under the radar because it was Tim Tebow's senior season. And so everybody just kind of assumed that Tim Tebow would lead Florida to another SEC championship and pick up his third national title. That was until Alabama beat Tebow and Florida 32-13 in the SEC championship game, which I will say is maybe the most shocking outcome of my life.
Yes.
I think I bet on Florida. I assumed Florida would win. I watched the game. Even when Alabama was winning early, I'm like, oh, well, here comes Tebow. He'll turn on. And I was just blown away that they just absolutely throttled Tebow in Florida. It wasn't even close, and nobody I know saw it coming. I remember watching with my friends in Hartford, and even after the game, we're like, are we sure that happened? Are we in the Matrix or something? And then they beat Texas in the national championship game, a game that unfortunately, despite it being a decent game and Alabama playing very well, it's best known for Colt McCoy being injured and Garrett Gilbert having to make his first start ever. So Alabama, I think really the story of this team, aside from them being the, you know, the real beginning of arguably the greatest dynasty in college football history, is that they kind of flew under the radar and we weren't ready for them. But now in hindsight, if you look at who was on the team and who got drafted and the margin of victory and how much they won, it seems like they might be a really underrated team in history. They might be a lot better than we remember them. So I'm going to send it over to Dan Partridge to break down the line. You know, what line will we put on this game? What over-under will we put on this game? And then how do you see it shaking out?
Well, thank you both, Ryan and Tom, for such an excellent introduction. Lot of information there. I mean,
Dan ate a whole pizza while we were talking.
I could have. I mean, that was amazing. I'm totally okay with it. Okay, there's a lot going on here, as usual. First of all, you just, you know, finished up talking about Alabama playing Texas in the national title game. If any of our listeners have an extra minute, go to YouTube and pull up the post-game Colt McCoy video interview. There's like no more real like emotional video you'll ever see from like a college sports player than how upset he was that he got hurt in that game. Like he knew that like his whole life will never be what he hoped it could be. Like he's moving on to the NFL and he really couldn't even care less about the NFL. And you can see it in his face right there. So that I want to say is one of the saddest videos you'll ever see in your life. So if you ever want to watch that, pull that up. But going back to the happy stuff, this game is amazing. That Florida State team was so good. They beat Tommy Frazier in Nebraska. That is an amazing stat that Ryan said about Derek Brooks. You know, Charlie Ward was there. That team was fantastic. On the flip side, you got Alabama, kind of came up out of nowhere. Just loaded with players, you know, all the running backs, all the linebackers, all the guys, you know, flying around everywhere who turned out to be superstars. Two just amazing teams, amazing head coaches. There's no coaching advantage. You know, there's like very little, you know, to see who's the, you know, team that should be favored. But here's how I'm going to first come up with an over-under on this. I think it's going to be a little bit lower. That Alabama team knew how to play a little bit more low-scoring game and you know, some defense. Florida State, as you know, knows how to play defense with Derek Brooks and them. So I'm going to say this one's going to be a little bit lower. It's not going to be super low like NFL, you know, like a 49, but it's not going to be like a college, you know, in the, you know, mid-60s. I'm going to put it in the low to mid-50s, 53.5 for a total on this game. And for the spread, I'm going to make it Florida State -1.5. That being said, I am going to pick Florida in an – or sorry, correction. I would like to pick Alabama in an upset. Similar to last week, this team beat Tim Tebow his senior year in the SEC title game. If you just pick up that Alabama team from right there, their performance in that game, and obviously the national title game, I mean – it's Tim Tebow. It's senior year. I mean, we're going to talk about Tim Tebow maybe even as soon as next week. Like Tom said, I've never been maybe more surprised watching a college football game. I'm trying to think of other examples. Maybe when Nebraska lost to UT and Mac Brown, I think in like 96, 97, we talked about that. That game as well. But I can't believe that Tim Tebow lost. So I'm going to say Florida State should be a slight favorite just because of being number one ranked in offense and defense. I would also like to point out that Florida State, you know, winning in conference by 41 points per game just shows you how college football as a sport has really improved. That kind of nonsense is really, you know, almost impossible now. There's so many teams in each conference who are competitive. I mean, in each conference, in theory, there could be, you know, 2, 3, 4, even, you know, 4 or 5 potential conference winners. So again, hats off again to college football for improving your product and just getting better every year. But I think Florida State, slight favorite in this game, about 53.5. I would bet Florida, but that's what I would put it at. So I'm going to pass it around.
Well, that was a good breakdown. I like that. I like the line. I think the number is right. Between 53, 58, I think was the right over-under, probably leaning on the low end. Definitely agree with that. However, Dan, I'm going to go chalk on this one. And really, it's one main reason. Derek effing Brooks. That's the reason. Just like Dan said, Tebow is his reason for going towards Alabama. For me, that Alabama team was as good as they were. They were Mark Ingram. They were the running backs, you know, even the backups they by committee a bit. That team was all about running the ball first and foremost. And I just feel like Derek Brooks was such a freak and a maniac. And Bowden, as much as it, I don't like admitting it, was just a great coach. And he would have that guy fired up and ready to go. And I think it would turn into, could Greg McElroy through the air outscore Charlie Ward? And, you know, I think Warwick Dunn wouldn't do much running the ball. But I think, like you said, that the innovative offense, screens, flares, swing passes, getting him into space could give them some problems. And so I actually have Florida State with a slight win, and I'm going to go 24-23 Florida State. 1-point win. They don't cover the 1.5 spread, but they do win the game slightly. Tommy, break the tie for us.
All right, so we have another tie, just like last week, and I have to break the tie again. Last week was the hardest game I've ever had to pick. This is another one that I had a lot of struggle with. So next week, I'm going first. but anyway, last week I was just super torn, and I actually made up my mind kind of on the spot. This week, I do have a pick. I would just like to say up front, this is very, very difficult. And first off, any team that makes our 16-team bracket deserves the utmost respect. But last week, we had two teams that were very similar in their style of play. And so we kind of looked at each position and broke down who's a little bit better. This week is about the matchups, because we have two teams that are very different. We have the Florida State. They have the amazing defense. They also have the kind of interesting high-powered offense led by Ward and those receivers. And as you said, screens, flares, etc. Alabama was the opposite. Pro style, pound it out, run it up the middle. They also had the D. And the Alabama D, to me, is the deciding factor in this game. They are unbelievable. I mentioned the bench was... the starters were incredible. The bench was even better. I think they would be able to stop Charlie Ward, at least limit his attack. They did it to Tebow. As I mentioned, that was the most impressive or most shocking game I've ever seen. And the fact that Notre Dame was the one team that beat Florida State, well, you look at Notre Dame and what kind of team they were that year. They were a team that had an incredible D and relied on rushing. They were similar to a 2009 Alabama team. So, Alabama, on the strength of their defense, wins 21-18 in a very low-scoring game. That's my pick, and it saddens me that in two consecutive weeks, two of the teams that I find the most fun in all of college football and two that I have the most nostalgia for are out, but... you got to go with your head and not with your heart. And I think this 2009 Alabama team is very underrated. And as we go on in the years and people look more at the numbers and who came out of that team, I think their legend is only going to grow and grow. Although they may not be the best Alabama team, which we'll talk about in a future week. So, So I hate to go against you again, Spillett, but unfortunately I'm breaking the tie in favor of 2009 Alabama, our second upset.
Wow. All right. We got a 9 and a 10 advancing.
That's right.
This is fun. This is great.
So this has been good. So our 1 seed Nebraska advances, 95 Nebraska. Our 3 seed 2005 Texas advances. Our 9 seed 99 Florida State advances. And then our 10 seed 2009 Alabama advances. So Florida State will be represented in the next level. And we'll be back next week. Do you want to tease what matchup you think we'll do next week, or should we keep it a surprise?
Oh, it's a surprise.
So let me just list the ones that are remaining. We've got 2004 USC versus the 2014 Ohio State with Cardale Jones, JT Barrett. We've got 2001 Miami with Ken Dorsey against the 2010 Cam Newton Auburn team. We have 2012 Alabama with McCarron against the 94 Penn State team, a controversial pick in this field as they did not officially win a title, but that's the Kerry Collins, Kajana Carter team that is as good as almost anyone. We have Tebow's Florida against 1992 Alabama. And so those are the remaining games, and one of those will be next week. So stay tuned. Dan wants Tebow, but we'll have to wait and see. Anybody have a parting shot before we go?
I would. Yes, this is going to be a controversial parting shot, so if you don't want to hear politics, turn this off real quick, and I rarely talk them. Last week, Texas played USC in what was an unbelievable college football game on Saturday night. Going forward, these two teams will not be able to play due to the state of California not agreeing with certain states' political views on things like transgender, bathroom issues, and, you know, just things that are very important in society. However, can we keep the two things completely separate and not associate football with politics and major life things? This college ball should be an escape on a Saturday to get you away from your Monday through Friday activities to clear your head. If you want to put some money on and have fun, fantastic. If not, who cares? Just enjoy the game. But for actual college football to have to be changed so that these two teams can't be played is absolutely ridiculous. Things have gone too far and out of control, and this is just another overreaction in 2017. And it's a shame that things have to change because people just take things too far, and this is another example. I'm sorry, America. This is lame. But anyway, hope you enjoyed the game Saturday. It was a lot of fun. Maybe when California becomes its own country, we can renegotiate the TV contract, but we'll have to take a look in a couple of years. That's all I got to say about that.
Dan pulling for Calexit.
Yeah, it's coming. Trust me. If you live in Arizona, you know it's coming. Every person in California wears a California t-shirt now. Every single one of them. So they're already like marking their territory going, just to let you know when it goes down, we're the ones who are leaving. So, like, if, like, say I'm at work and someone, you know, maybe works for me and they wear a California shirt, I have to kind of in my head know that they're going to leave for California when they move away from the union. It's just a matter of time. But, it's just, you know, come on, man. It's just college football. Texas and USC should be able to play college football. It doesn't matter what people who get elected think, and, you know, there's kickbacks and all the nonsense. That stuff should all be put aside. And two teams should be able to play each other because they're 18 to 22 year old kids, and they have nothing to do with this bullshit. So I'm sorry, didn't mean to rant. I got mad. I was thinking about that watching that game on Saturday.
No, I actually I can't add anything because I actually didn't know about any of this. So I'll have to do some research.
Not good.
All right, does Spillett, is Spillett even there anymore? Does he have a parting shot?
He's always here and he's there, but right now he's also here.
Ryan, parting shots.
I'm not going to top Dan. So what I'm going to say is I've already purchased some of that California gear.
You did, actually.
I will add that not only is it California, they all say what? California Republic. Every single one of them is already making sure that they're saying that they are the Republic of California. I've purchased some of this gear, so don't worry. If shit goes down, I'm going to San Diego and take the points. It's going to be done on the beach.
Well, my home city of Hartford is about 2 months from declaring bankruptcy, so San Diego is my favorite city in America, so I might just join you there, and we'll do live take the points from Coronado Beach every day. All right, Dan's got something good, so let me just say before he goes, takethepoints.net, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to this show. We feel like we are wasting our time slightly less the more people that listen, so thank you. And now Dan will end the show with something good, I presume.
Maybe not. One last point I'd like to make about California and Texas not playing each other. In World War One, on
you're going deep.
I'm going deep. Listen to me real quick. On Christmas Day, December 25th in World War One, while there's a crazy historic first of its kind war going on, two enemies fighting every day in terrible winter conditions trying to kill each other, they stopped for one day on Christmas Day, and they both fielded teams and grabbed a foosball and went on a field and played a nice game of European football. Yes, a soccer game was played on Christmas Day in the middle of World War One between two opposite sides. If that can happen, we can play football between Texas and California. That's all I want to say about that. Last point. Have a good night, everybody. We'll see you for week 5. We're going at least 2-1. Have a good night. Bye. We're only hurting ourselves here. Like, we're not putting a fucking embargo on college football on ourselves. It doesn't make sense.
The thing, like, you forget to mention, though, after that happened and all the like French and German and British people were meeting each other, a lot of them didn't want to fight the war anymore because they're like, oh, these are just normal dudes who are fighting. And so they had to change military training so they wouldn't make them so human.
Yes. Yeah. And maybe that will happen with California and Texas, and they'll go, you know what? Maybe there's a middle ground that we can find where that makes everybody happy and we can move on and actually focus on things that matter, like education, improving the economy.
We all hate New Mexico, our shared hatred of New Mexico.
And North and South Dakota, lump them together. We're going back down to 49 states. We can take over Vancouver, and that's going to be the 50th. Or maybe Cabo. We haven't decided yet. So
should we just sacrifice one state for the good of the nation? Like, let's just be like, everybody, South Dakota sucks. Let's get them.
Yes, or yeah, North Dakota's out, and just like we're making a wall north and south. See, both sides get a wall.
The wall goes like this, and then it dips down and goes back up.
That's right,
Dan. I think you just solved 2017.
It's very
possible.
We just
got to throw one Dakota under the bus. It's got to be north, right? Because the wall's easier to build. Otherwise, you're making like a self-contained wall.
It'd be a very hard wall to build. It's much easier just to eliminate North Dakota. We don't need it. North Dakota brings nothing to the table. South Dakota's got the fucking monument already. So it's like even more perfect because that monument's going to be right next to the new North-South Dakota border. So they'll really like you know, if people are looking over the border from North Dakota, it like sends a message because they can see that rock.
And then we create Rushmore 2 with the famous coaches. Spurrier.
Bowden.
Saban.
Yep, there you go.
Who else?
All set. Leach.
And Leach.
Holgorsen. It should be Leach, Holgorsen.
Yeah.
Gene Chizik.
Like, the Mount Rushmore of college football comedy.
It really is all you need.
Lane's
the first one, first off. Everyone just relax.
It's like, who's on your Mount Rushmore? I'll tell you who. We're making a bigger one with like 12 guys. Nobody says you have to stop at 4. There's more rock that could be carved.
That was in That's an excellent point, because they made that fucking thing years ago with bad technology. That's why they had to stop at 4. We can easily do 30, 40 rocks. And it's 2017 in this day and age. So it's we should put this out as a bonus segment. It'd be pretty good.
It is still recording, so I could.
Well, what you could do is make this like an old alternative 90s album and be like, all right, good night, everyone. Fade out, take the points. But then they'll see if there's still another 4 minutes left of stuff. And it'll pick back up and they'll go, oh, this is like when I was 13 and I bought that Green Day album. And then I had to fast forward to hear the guy Trey Cool play all by myself on acoustic guitar. Or I had to listen to the Meat Puppets and fast forward to hear the song that was on the Nirvana Unplugged. Or fast forward Nirvana to hear the bonus track, or fast forward Queens of the Stone Age to hear Feel Good Hit of the Summer reprise. See,
or,
we could
or wonder why the Cracker CD, the one hit off the Cracker CD, was track 99.
There you go. You and Ryan each said that 3,000 miles apart.
Did Ryan say crack? I could barely hear that.
And literally at the same time, 3 hour time zone difference. You both said cracker.
Yeah, because that stupid fucking Cracker CD had 99 tracks, and it was like, it wasn't like 1 through 12 and then 99. It was like 1 through 8, and then there was like nothing, and then like track 24 was a song, and then there was nothing.
Son of a bitch.
And then like 47, so you're like skips. You're like, where are the songs? Not cool, David Lowry.
That is a lost art music that all these Spotify kids, which I'm a Spotify man, I guess you can say now or whatever. But, you know, I mean, that's a lost art in CDs and albums was the extra bonus track.
Because it worked in that medium. Now it is a detriment because you put on Spotify Mix and you put on like Release by Pearl Jam and it ends and you're like at a party and all of a sudden there's 4 minutes of silence and you're like, oh shit, I forgot the song is a bonus track. And then you get Master Slave just Amon hitting the bass.
You don't want any Master Slave action at a corporate party, Tom.
No, unless you don't. No, not in shared company. You don't.
This conversation's definitely getting added on. You got to definitely do the fade out in 30 seconds of silence. You can even pick any of your favorite 90s album and actually do a second sample of that if you want to. No one's gonna sue us. We're good.
It sounds good. But this show's gonna end. There's gonna be take the points. There's gonna be this like 5 minute segment, and then we're ending with Cracker. And if we get sued, then fuck
low, em. Low on repeat. It's gonna post as a 4 hour podcast with the last 2 hours being just low, just the same version on repeat.
That's right. God. Or the lounge song from Stone Temple Pilots, Purple.
Which was the song from MTV News, right?
That's about. Not Lounge Fly. He actually sang like a lounge singer.
Oh, that's right. Correct. I totally fucking forgot
about
that.
The second album.
The second album. Better than the first.
That's the one. Maybe I'll end with that instead of Cracker.
The second podcast. Please, call out of work tomorrow. Use your fucking college degree and edit this up.
Done.
All right, Tom. We're going to go get a pizza and get the hell out of Southeast Phoenix and go back our separate ways. Oh, we gave away our secret location. Well, better time to leave now. See y'all next week.